Very well. We will call the case of City of North Las Vegas versus Ward Burton. This is case number 5502. And Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you. And I'd like to again reserve 5 minutes.
Very well.
We're back again on Ms. Warburton's case. This one's a little more interesting as far as the procedural history goes. Ms. Warburton's claim was obviously accepted, as your honors know, from the last argument we made. As part of that argument, there were some factual findings, which are in both appendices, about what her job duties were on the day of her injury. What wasn't in those decisions, the original decision, was anything about the relevancy of that, whether we were arguing over her being a pool manager versus not being a pool manager. So when the claim was ultimately accepted, my client issued a determination letter regarding her wage calculation. We used her actual wages. She had worked in the capacity that she was working in, our argument would be at the time of her injury, for a number of years. So we used her actual wages. That went before the first level hearing officer, who ruled we had to use pool manager wages. We then appealed to the appeals officer. The appeals officer issued the decision that said we can use her actual wages. We then went to the district court, and the district court issued a ruling that said a couple of things, which is one of the reasons we have appealed. The number one, she's a pool manager. That's already been established, not only by the first appeals officer decision, but by the hearing officer decision concerning wages, which I found somewhat interesting because that's the same chain of events that we're taking up in the litigation. I didn't know we were bound by a decision that we actually got the appeals officer to overturn. So issue number one was, we're already bound by the fact that she's a pool manager. And issue number two that the district court found was that she had assumed the responsibilities of a pool manager, and so therefore she was to be covered as a pool manager. We've appealed before you for a number of reasons. First and foremost, we do not believe that the underlying decision in the other case that uses the word pool manager means that that's res judicata or issue preclusion. We've given you the cases. That was not one of the issues that was argued at the underlying case. Pool manager versus job title was not an issue. Wages were not an issue. And you have the unique position in that you have the entire record from the underlying case from 10 minutes ago. You will see as you go through the transcript, we never argued over whether that was something that we were fighting about, wages and whether her pool manager wages should be used versus her other job wages. We never argued about it. It would be our argument that in order to use issue preclusion, it actually has to be an issue. Secondarily, on that particular point, we are still before your honors on that other case. So that case isn't done yet. We're still before you on that other case. With regard to actually trying to decide this issue under the law, not under an issue preclusion argument, what we've been ordered to do by the district court would result in a windfall to Ms. Warburton. She wasn't getting paid that amount on the date of injury. She had never gotten paid that amount. If we pay her that amount, her wage base would actually be higher than her actual earnings were. And as your honors know, in workers' compensation, you get approximately 66 and two-thirds of your wage base with a max cap, which isn't applicable to this case. She would actually earn more than 66 and two-thirds, significantly more, if we follow the logic of the district court. More than she ever earned with this employer, if we follow the logic of the district court. There was testimony in both this case and in the underlying case. We submitted the transcript of the acceptance claim, I'll call it, as part of this. There was testimony from her supervisor that he was planning on making her a pool manager, that he had asked her if she wanted to be the pool manager. She had said she wanted to be the pool manager. None of the paperwork had been done yet to effectuate her move up to be a pool manager. So even factually, if we do not use the prior decision as a bar today, factually, she wasn't the pool manager. We've attempted to use her actual wages, which would seem to be the most equitable way to do things. And in those wages, we come up with the number that we've come up with. The district court also cited in their decision to Nevada Administrative Code 616C444. Nevada Administrative Code 616C444 is the statute that says that if you've moved into another position, then we use that position's wages for purposes of wage base. And again, the problem with that is the only evidence that we have that she moved into that new position is the statements and the arguments in the underlying case, which really wasn't relevant. The actual evidence we have in the form of her paychecks is what we attempted to use to calculate her wages, not some other pay that she may or may not have gotten in the future. She had assumed some of the responsibilities, but she was not yet a pool manager. She was getting paid at a different rate, and she would not have gotten paid at that increased rate unless the promotion went through. And when you go back again and read the transcript of her supervisor, he recommends a promotion, and then it goes to Human Resources. Where it goes from there is up to Human Resources. It doesn't necessarily automatically happen. And that's the facts we have of this case. I've searched again for some law on this issue. I've given you a couple citations, but I think the most controlling citation is the Montoya case. And what Montoya dealt with is using an individual's wage base. It was a concurrent employment type case or a union referral type case, but as opposed to using actual wages, using some other type of wages that would result in an increased wage base over what was actually earned. And what this court held in that case is the whole purpose of this confusion and argument about wages and workers' compensation, which quite frankly is one of the least fun arguments we ever make because it involves math, the whole point of the wage base is to make it fair. That's the whole point. The whole reason we have all these wage calculation formulas and all these different statutes and codes is to make it fair, a fair calculation of your wages. And what they held in Montoya was if you use the wage in the way that Ms. Montoya is arguing, she would get a windfall, and that's not a fair, equitable way to do the wages. In this particular case, if we follow the rationale of the district court, Ms. Warburton would get a windfall. She would get a wage base much higher than any wage base she ever would have had while working prior to her injury. Benefits vest, according to statute, on the date of injury. We can even use her wages on the date of injury. The only way her wage goes to this much larger amount is if we decide we're going to call her a pool manager, and because she doesn't have any pool manager wages, use like pool managers at the time. And as you can see from the transcript, the dilemma with that is there were no like pool managers at the time. Because she had not yet been made a pool manager, she had not yet gone into certain things that pool managers would do, which would give them additional hours on their paycheck. So we really can't even do that. Probably the only way we could do this with a pool manager in mind is to find some type of almost pool manager and use those wages, see what an almost pool manager makes. So very briefly, again, our position is we are not held to the finding of fact in the underlying appeals officer's decision because that was not the issue. It was never argued. It was never briefed. It was never an issue. There was no wage calculation because the claim was denied. In order to have issue preclusion, we would have to have that issue be something we've already argued. If we deal with this actually on the merits, there's really no way to get to where the district court got to without using the prior decision as some type of bar to our argument. We would ask on this particular issue that you reinstate the appeals officer's ruling, which indicated that we should use Ms. Warburton's actual wages in order to render our determination. And that the actual language of the appeals officer was to use her actual wages for the period of time from May 19th, 2004 to May 19th, 2005, excluding periods of time that she was a student, which are exempted from the statute for inclusion. So any of the periods of time that she worked with this particular employer for that 1 year period, statutorily we use a 1 year period if it makes the wage go higher, minus the times that she was a student, was what we were ordered to do, and we believe that's the correct wage determination calculation formula. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. Mr. Cox.
Good morning again, Your Honors. Different from this morning's argument is the standard of review. In this morning's argument, the standard of review is whether or not there was substantial evidence to support the factual findings of the appeals officer. In this case, you have actual legal issues in which an interpretation of the regulations and statutes, which the review of such is de novo. And that's one of the principal differences between this morning's and the reason why the district court properly reversed the findings of the appeals officer. Ms. Warburton had been hired in February of 2005, had been a rehire. She was employed full-time. Initially, she was going to be working, I think it was 15 hours a week. She was also still going to school. She was hired as a water safety instructor. Not long prior to this accident, she was promoted to a pool manager. She was doing all the jobs of a pool manager. And the issue of her being a pool manager was, in fact, something that was of significance in the previous hearing and that had to do with claim acceptance.
What rate of pay was she receiving at that time, at the time of the accident?
At the time of the accident, her pay was the same as a water safety instructor. The promotion, as stated by the supervisor, had not been processed by Human Resources Department.
Paperwork submitted, and was it in the process of being finalized?
That is one of the difficult aspects we've had during the litigation of this particular matter, was when the wage base was finally arrived at, when they did accept the claim or begin starting paying the claim after it was ordered to be accepted. They came up with an amount of about $800. Actually, it was originally $600 and some due to a clerical error that was subsequently corrected to be about $800 an hour. We requested the personnel file. We requested time cards because one of the regulations talks about when an employee is a full-time student that you don't include days in which they're employed and don't work. The regs, when you read the regs, especially all the regs that have to do with average monthly wage, they go towards maximizing the wage base of an employee. It's not to create a windfall, but it is to come up with the most fair and accurate assessment. Part of the claims file that, or part of the personnel file that we received, contained a, moving forward to when after the accident, Ms. Warburton was in the hospital for several weeks. Then she was subsequently in a rehab center for, I believe, another 2 or 3 months. She was finally able to do some light duty work approximately about 11 months after the accident. Having lost her leg, she obviously wasn't in a position to be a pool manager. They reassigned her to the Parks and Recreations, and there was a, in her personnel file, there was a document that they did reclassifying her position. This is the only document that is in their personnel file that, that talks about her being a pool manager. And what it says is, again, she did not work from the day of the accident, and it was pretty clear on the day of the accident that she wasn't going to return that summer as a pool manager. But the personnel action form reclassifies her from that of a pool manager to a program, I believe it's a program supervisor. It shows that it's changing her wages from $12 an hour to $10.25 an hour.
But she never earned the $12 an hour.
She was never paid the $12 an hour. We don't dispute that she was not paid, but as far as what she earned, that is an issue that's in dispute. She was promoted to pool manager. She was given all the obligations of a pool manager. This argument today that you can't use like pool managers because they do additional activities, I don't believe is there's any evidence to support that in the record. You do have her testimony in the record as to what she did. She cleaned. She was in charge of cleaning. She was in charge of payroll. Not payroll, but she was in charge of scheduling the employees. She was in charge of the lifeguards. She opened and closed the pool. These are not the duties that she had when she was hired as a water safety instructor. These were the duties that she was given during the course of when she was promoted to the pool manager. And the employer would like to take the benefit of slow playing on the human resources, doing it, upgrading her for the job that she was actually doing, and say that, you know, because we slow played, we don't owe her for that, that she wasn't really a pool manager. Even though she was doing all the obligations of a pool manager for purposes of workman's comp, she wasn't a pool manager.
But there is no evidence in the record suggesting she was ever being paid by the City of North Las Vegas at the enhanced rate. Is that a fair statement?
Other than the reclassification of the personnel action
right.
That shows that her prior wages were $12 an hour, no, her final paycheck was paid at $10 an hour, whether or not had she continued working, you know, and this is one of the difficulties, and it was an issue that was raised, is that we have an employer that's in charge of all the personnel records and doesn't provide us the personnel records that actually, obviously she went from a water safety instructor to a pool manager because that's the reclassification she was going, they reclassified her from a pool manager in April of 2006. Back to a program or to a program supervisor. So she, at some point in time, was in fact moved to a pool manager, but conveniently, the employer doesn't have any documentation of that promotion from a water safety instructor. Likewise, doesn't identify what the. Don't dispute that on the day of the accident she was paid 10. What she should have paid is an issue, but under NAC 616-444. It's not limited to strictly what she's paid on the day of the accident. This, the code and the regulation provides that when a when there's been a change of it says when there's been a change or the average monthly wage of an employee who permanently or temporarily changes to a job with different duties, rate of pay, or hours of employment must be calculated using only the information concerning payroll which relates to the primary job at the time of the accident. The appeals officer in this case strictly construed the fact that she was paid $10 an hour and did not look any further in its inquiry and based its decision strictly on the fact that they did pay her $10 an hour, which was that of a water safety instructor. The regulation is not limited to that. It applies to when there's been a change of job duties. And undisputably, there had been a change in her job duties. She was doing the duties of a pool manager. In that case, the primary job at the time of the accident is what is controlling. This is a...
Well, it seems to be in conflict with 616C441, which says, as you know, that and is the provision immediately preceding 444, the earnings of an injured employee on the date on which an accident occurs will be used to calculate the average monthly wage. How do you reconcile that provision with the provision that you rely on?
There may be an ambiguity as to the two, because 444 clearly and plainly says something different. It says that you were to use the and again, 441 conflicts with more than just one reg. It also conflicts with the regs of 435 that talk about projecting earnings when you don't have a period of 4 weeks. So it's not limited just to, I mean, 444 is vague and has problems on more than one level. Not just that it, I mean, 441, not just that it conflicts with 444, but that it also conflicts with 435. Because when you don't have 4 weeks, minimum of 4 weeks worth of wages, you have to go to projected or you have to go to hourly.
So your argument is that 444 is not ambiguous. It's rendered ambiguous by the other provision.
My argument is that 441 is ambiguous because of it conflicting with other regulations, not that 444 is ambiguous, nor that it is rendered ambiguous.
So your view is the statutory regulatory scheme set up by 444 and the other provision contemplates some sort of projection of wage calculation if the person has been promoted, and that can be demonstrated even if they didn't earn it.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's, you know, it is the methodology that you go through. 12 weeks is what's typically wanted. If you don't have 12 weeks, you go to a year. But if you don't have, if you got a shorter term of employment than 12 weeks, you go to the shorter period of employment. If you have less than 4 weeks of employment, you have to project the earnings of the employment. And it's done based upon, one of the methods that's done is based upon similar workers in similar positions. And 444 in the situation that ultimately the district court found really is no different than you would have a scenario of someone that's just graduated law school, hasn't been working, starts working, and within the first 4 weeks of their employment, they're hurt. They don't have a wage history. If you went back 12 weeks or if you went back a year, there's no wage history. To argue that there's a windfall, 444 kind of goes to that type of scenario and the scenario where you have a change of position, that it looks to not necessarily give a windfall, but to provide an accurate wage base for scenarios under which you don't have wages, back wages to support it. It's been argued that Ms. Warburton would receive a windfall if her wages are calculated using that of what the pool managers were. But what's ignored from that aspect is that the employer is the one that receives a windfall from a contrary. Ms. Warburton was originally hired as a water safety instructor to work 15 hours a week. She did that for a couple weeks, and then she was working more and more. She worked 23 hours the week the accident happened. In 4 days, she worked 23 hours. She listed on that time card that she turned in 15 minutes before this accident happened, she listed herself as the manager. She didn't list herself as the water safety instructor, but as the manager. This was prior to the accident happening. It was a few minutes within it happening. She was working more and more, and she was scheduled to be the pool manager, working for 40 hours a week throughout the summer. They would have you base her wages and say that it's acceptable to base her wages on something that's between 15 and 20 hours and at a lower rate. There's the windfall. The employer, knowing that it was going to have to, and that Ms. Warburton was in fact going to be paid $12 an hour at a 40-hour work week, they're looking to pay her approximately half of the wages that she would have been earning during the time that she was actually off work and not capable of working. She had been promoted. The evidence is, it's clear that, and the supervisor acknowledged that he had told her of the promotion. He had told other employees of the promotion. The employer did not identify one activity that during the course of this appeal and before the appeals officer, one activity that Ms. Warburton was of a pool manager that Ms. Warburton was not performing. It had the opportunity, and it talked about how they were at a disadvantage because the issues in the prior appeal were not, they would like you to believe that her position was not one of the issues in that case. They had the option of bringing in testimony. They had the option of bringing in her supervisor. They had the option of providing the personnel forms and the information. They chose not to do that. They chose to submit the transcript from the prior proceedings, all of which dealt with one of the central aspects was, why would Ms. Warburton be going back to Walker Pool? Well, it was because she was an outstanding employee with great responsibility and following the advice of her supervisor, and that she was doing that as a pool manager, looking out and taking care of the pool. It went a long way. It was a very significant underlying issue litigated in the original appeal, which is further evidenced by the fact that the appeals officer's decision, the first four factual findings, all talk about her job. It talks about how she was acting in the capacity of a pool manager. It talks about what duties she was charged with, that she was charged with opening and closing the pool, and all of these things. And for a appeals officer to subsequently ignore that, ignore the portions of the regulation which talk not only to a change of duties and limit it strictly to a finding that because she was paid $10 an hour, that was in fact her job. Her job is what she does. Her job is not what the employer chooses to pay her because they are slow in processing her promotion. Her job was that of a pool manager because that was the job that she was doing.
Mr. Cox, quick question. If she had not been a pool manager on the day of the accident, but instead had, out of the goodness of her heart or for whatever reason, at the bequest of her supervisor, gone past the other pool, would she have been paid extra?
I don't believe that there was any indication that the employees were, the managers were being paid to do the drive-bys. I don't think there was any, she wouldn't.
So a pool manager and a water safety person could be called upon to do the same thing?
They could be called upon. The obligations that you would feel as a pool manager versus a water safety instructor, obviously, differ.
Sure.
Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you. Actually, in answer to the question you just asked, if you look at we've given you, in this case, the record on appeal from the underlying case as well, and in that one, there are three affidavits from three water safety people who say that they were also suggested that they would check the pool when the time happened. Every single person, with the exception of one witness who we think was just confused as far as this issue, said they were not paid to do that, they were not paid extra to do that, and they felt it was not only their obligation because they were asked, but also their civic obligation. Ms. Warburton specifically said her conscience would have made her go check those things.
Had she made a schedule out on the day of the accident?
No. We don't have one in evidence.
A work schedule is what I'm referring
right.
to.
We do not have one in evidence.
Right. But checking pools was something that all of the staff was asked to do, not unique to pool managers' functions or duties.
According to the affidavits that were submitted, correct. Correct. Just a quick thing. When we're dealing with this issue of this underlying other decision somehow precluding us from making this argument. I've given you in my brief, and I'm just going to give it very briefly to you, some of the language of the Michael Ruby case. And what this court held is the following factors are necessary for application of issue preclusion. Excuse me. Number one, the issue decided in the prior litigation must be identical to the issue presented in the current action.
What case are you citing to?
Ruby.
I think we have a newer case that deals with that. It's a five-star case, don't we?
I think I have cited to that as well, Your Honor.
I hope so.
We've also cited to that.
Very good.
But they all seem to have that same conclusion that it's got to be the identical issue. And in workers' comp, what's unique is we argue a specific issue. We don't argue everything at one time, as evidenced by the fact that we have two different Supreme Court cases before you today. So the wage wasn't part of the issue on the first argument. Secondarily, on page 82 of the record is the applicant referral form for the year of 2005 for Ms. Warburg. It was started in January of 05 and was eventually signed off, it looks like, from everybody in February of 05, and it clearly says that she was hired at that point to be a water safety instructor slash temp at the hourly rate that she was paid up until her date of injury. The testimony regarding her becoming a manager, and I think the supervisor would most likely be the person who would know the answer to these questions, is on page 232 of the appendix, and he was specifically asked, "You liked Mallory as an employee? Answer, I thought she was great. Question, you promoted her from lifeguard then to water safety instructor, and then she was recently told she was going to be a pool manager at Walker Pool, correct? Answer, we were going to make that promotion to her, yes." So at the time of this accident, she was told she was going to be a pool manager. It's not a slowness of paperwork thing. They had not yet made the promotion request, which is why when we were asked to give the promotion request information, the best thing we had was what happened a year later when she was being put into a temporary modified duty position.
Did she undertake those duties, though? It was indicated to us that
she did do some of the duties as a pool manager.
Undertaken some of those duties as a pool manager.
That's absolutely correct. She undertook some of the duties as a pool manager. She was being paid the rate of pay as a water instructor.
She, in fact, opened and closed the pool. She collected time cards. She oversaw staffing. No? Given keys to the pools?
She was given keys. She opened and closed the pools. There's a finding of fact that she oversaw schedules, but if you read through the deposition transcript, they had not gotten to that point yet.
Collected time cards?
They had not gotten to that point yet either. But some of the duties of pool manager, yes, she had undertaken.
So the findings of fact set forth in the district judge's order are a bit overbroad.
They're a bit overbroad, but she had, in fact, I mean, Mr. Cox is correct, and if I made the impression that she had not done any of the job duties of a pool manager, I was mistaken. I didn't mean to make that impression. But we go back to the very argument that Mr. Cox made. You have a law student who gets out of law school. Eventually, we hope they will pass the bar and become a lawyer. They may do a lot of lawyerly-like tasks as a law clerk. If they get hurt while they're a law clerk, do we pay them what the lawyer's rate was? Statutorily, or actually by code, we don't. And when we hear the argument that 616...
Because they can't act as lawyers until they pass the bar.
Correct, which we don't have that issue here, because obviously you can act as whatever you want to act as. And again, she was paid $10 an hour. From the transcript, it appears as though all these people were happy and liked each other.
On the interpretation of the conflicting or apparently conflicting regulations, would we compensate the law student or law clerk who becomes a lawyer the same day that individual is injured in a serious accident based on the lawyer rate as opposed to the law clerk rate?
So they actually became a lawyer in your hypothetical after the accident, but
on the day of the accident?
The day of the accident. They passed the bar. They're headed from their office to the courthouse, and they're injured.
And I believe that's...
Is the rate of pay under 4-4... I'm trying to apply the regulations
here. I understand. That's
is the rate of pay determined under 444 and 441 the lawyer rate of pay or the law clerk rate of pay?
And I would argue it's the law clerk rate of pay because they have not yet been paid as a lawyer.
Why?
And I don't see the conflict between the statutes.
I'm trying to get your interpretation of the conflicting regulations,
and I guess
or seemingly
the reason why I'm having a hard time, because I don't see a conflict. If you look at NAC 616C435, that lays out the priorities for calculating average monthly wage. Everything is retroactive. There is the only prospective one is when you don't have any wages. The only prospective part of 435 is when we have no wages that fall within the periods that are allocated, and it's in an order. If you read the code section, priority order. And we only get to the projection when we don't have enough wages. It also specifically gives us under subsection 7 a way to apply it reasonably and fairly. But that also is not prospective. And then subsection 8 says we have to use consecutive days ending on the date of the injury.
But 444 refers to the date of the injury by referencing must be calculated using only information concerning payroll which relates to his primary job at the time of the accident.
Payroll. The key word in that statute is payroll. That statute does not say what you're doing that day.
So primary job has no meaning?
Primary job has meaning, but it says you must use payroll information. So how do we use payroll information and use a wage that no one's getting paid yet because eventually they may get this promotion or eventually they may pass the bar?
So I understand you feel that the provision in 444 is plain and unambiguous, but if it's ambiguous, your argument would be that the other provisions in 443 and 441, when harmonized, would result in a limitation on the amount paid under 444.
And with the Montoya holding, correct. If we find ambiguity and it results in a much higher rate, which is the facts of this case, using the terms reasonable and fair, which would obtain within the code section, as well as the Montoya holding, I believe would rationalize or solve that ambiguity.
Thank you, counsel. This matter will stand submitted. The court will be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.